You guys, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books was nominated for a Webby Award, which is this really prestigious award that I am dying to win. And there's a People's Voice component, and you can vote and get me from number two, second place, to first place. But you have to vote. Please go to vote.webbys.com. Vote.webbys.com, but it's kind of complicated, so it might be easier just to go to zibbyowens.com or my Instagram at zibbyowens, where it'll always be in my stories and it's in one of those little circle highlights. Please, please, please vote. Voting ends April 18th and I'm in second place, so please vote for best individual episode, talk show, interview show. Thank you so much.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLaughlin. Jay McLaughlin is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with Jay McLaughlin and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have Jay McLaughlin stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through Jay McLaughlin's local and loyal programming. Host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to Jay McLaughlin's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern. And the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at Jay McLaughlin. And so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. Jay McLaughlin is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20. Capital ZIBBY 20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital Z Zibby 20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white open long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal striped sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, Jay McLaughlin. Thanks so much.
Hi, I'm Zibby Owens, and you're listening to the award-winning podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. If you like this podcast, you will love my new anthology called Moms Don't Have Time to Have Kids. Check it out, and you'll hear from 49 authors about all sorts of things moms don't have time to do. All the authors have been on this podcast. Also, check out my TikTok, at with Zibby and Tracy, my other podcast, Sex Talk with Zibby and Tracy. Check out Moms Don't Have Time to Write on Medium. And of course, my new publishing company called Zibby Books. And now back to our daily author interview site and a quick hello from some of my kids.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Enjoy the show. If you like this podcast, you will love my new anthology called Moms Don't Have Time to Have Kids. Here's a little snippet by one of the authors from the anthology.
My name is Richie Jackson, and I'm thrilled to have contributed to Moms Don't Have Time to Have Kids. My essay is called Peloton and On and On. And what I really don't have time for is losing weight.
Carolyn Farrell is the author of Dear Miss Metropolitan. She's the author of the short story collection Don't Erase Me as well, which was awarded the Art Seidebaum Award of the Los Angeles Times Book Prize, the John C. Zacharias Award given by Plowshares and the Quality Paperback Book Prize for First Fiction. She's also received grants from the Fulbright Association German Academic Exchange, DAAD, City University of New York Magnet Program, and National Endowment for the Arts. Farrell's stories have been anthologized in Best American Short Stories and the Best American Short Stories of the Century, among other places. She teaches writing at Sarah Lawrence College and lives in New York with her husband and children. Welcome, Caroline. Thank you so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss Dear Miss Metropolitan, a novel.
Thank you very much for having me.
My pleasure. Would you mind please telling listeners what your book is about?
Well, in a nutshell, I would say my book is, the plot is based on three girls who are kidnapped, held hostage, and eventually make their way to freedom. That's the basic plot, but the book is spread out. It's got tentacles everywhere. And it's also about how, not only how they deal with this tragedy, but how their community deals with the tragedy, their various communities. So that I was looking at their own experience, but also the larger experience of the people around them.
I thought it was really interesting, by the way, that you started with like an intern at a magazine or an intern at the local paper writing the story of what happened, because you said, just like you said, like the larger community can't believe that this happened sort of in their backyard and that nobody knew. And what does happen to a community when something so traumatic happens right there?
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting. I think that sadly, we're seeing it played out right now with the Gabby Petito case.
Yes.
That, you know, all over the country, communities are awakened and are, you know, protesting and thinking about how, you know, women's lives, what their worth is. But I would say the other thing that's come out of the Gabby Petito case is that now more people are thinking about brown and black girls who disappear and who do not get the national attention, you know. So while it's a tragedy all around, I mean, it's quite horrible what happened and what's probably the outcome of that case. This was an opportunity to kind of look at all of the neglected Native American women who have been disappearing, women in Mexico, you know, and just, you know, in our own backyard, brown and black women who just disappear and upon whom no media attention is shown.
So true. And it's so interesting the way you call the woman the mother, and then how you explain the backstory, because I feel like it's so easy to make judgments about why somebody turns out the way they do and to assume the worst at first. But you have this nice passage. You said, can I just read this one paragraph?
If that's okay.
You said, to soothe my brother, I started to tell the story about why the mother really acted the way she did. Oh, I hate this story, Bud said. Once upon a time, the mother was delivered into the world on wings. She had an okay father. She had, however, a mother who was no more than a fuzzy Polaroid. The world wasn't paying attention when it doled out these two parents. Well, time went on. I'm going to be different than these two, the mother told herself. And then she turned around again, and here was the world once more, giving her two funny-looking kids. Come on, world. What games you playing with me? And then it says, she talks about the mother and how, I wish it could be another ending, but then it wouldn't be us, Bud observed.
Right.
Tell me about that and adding that layer of sort of context.
Yeah, I felt that it was really important to add context to all of the characters, not just the three girls who were abducted, but everyone in their orbit. You know, even the most minor character, I tried to give a little bit of context. And, you know, of course, one of the most difficult people to do that for was Boss Man, the man who kidnaps and rapes and tortures them. You know, how do you make someone who is completely unsympathetic into a character that people will want to read, will want to invest themselves in? And the answer for me was to not make him completely unsympathetic. In other words, to give him dimension. You know, we don't like him. We, you know, he's a loser in every way, but he had this history, and perhaps that can explain why he is the way he is. So that was really important to me, to give everybody, so that it wasn't, I don't know, it's boring if you have characters that are all bad or all good. You know, you have to give them dimensions and texture.
Well, most people are not all good or all bad in reality.
Right.
We all have, everybody has a backstory and their parents have a backstory. And, you know, inherited trauma is such a big topic these days. And some of this stuff is just, it seeps in before and colors everything you do going forward. So.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, that to look at trauma, I was also very interested in that to kind of look at the lineage of trauma and how it's passed on and how each generation does something different. You know, it's always different. And, you know, Fern and Gwenny, when they are rescued, they don't have any children. But of course, there's a child who's born in captivity, Catania, and she is veering down a very different path than her mother and her grandmother. So I just really wanted to capture as best as I could the different aspects of their experiences. And it may not be as easy as saying, well, this is why she turned out this way, but it just gives the reader a picture and the reader can come to her own conclusions.
So what made you write this story? Like, where did this idea come from for you?
Well, I had been thinking about writing fairy tales. And I, in fact, the original title of this book was The Last Life of the Three Bears, because I was really interested in revising, updating fairy tales. And I thought about the first fairy tale that was on my mind was Goldilocks. And I was thinking about, you know, a girl gets lost in the woods and she comes upon this house. And I was looking at Goldilocks as both kind of a, for lack of a better word, a colonizer. She just goes in and makes herself at home, but also someone for whom the consequences were quite surprising and she can even be victimized. So I was thinking about that. And then all of these things were happening in the news. You know, the Ariel Castro story happened and the story that took place in Vienna where the father locked his daughter in, you know, for 27 years in the basement. And there were just a lot of things happening in the news. And it seemed to me that the story of girls held captive was just going on and on. And it was, you know, unfortunately now it's, like, it's sort of like school shootings. You know, you when someone says, oh, did you hear about the school? Which one? You know, it just happens so frequently now. And we've just in some ways become desensitized. And I really wanted to pluck, when I was thinking about these cases, I really wanted to pluck the characters that I created because I did not want to write a true crime story. That people, for example, in the Ariel Castro case, they're still alive. And I did not, you know, it wasn't my place to tell their story. But I was just, when that story hit the news, I asked the same question that everyone did. How could people not know? How could they not know? You know, and then I thought about, well, what are the repercussions, you know, for the society around them? You know, it's not like people just think, oh, okay, they're going to be okay. They'll get some therapy and they'll be okay. That, you know, or this idea that they'll get closure. That's, you know, what is closure? What's closure? You know, closure goes on for the rest of your life. So I was thinking about those news stories, but there was something else that was on my mind. I mean, there were actually a lot of things that there were a lot of sources of kind of grim inspiration for this book. But I'm not normally a viewer of true crime, but I happened to watch a true crime show one day. And it was about this, a Black woman who was a sex worker who'd been kidnapped by a white man and probably in Ohio, I think it was. And she was telling her story. You know, she obviously had been rescued because she was telling it in retrospect. But there was something about her story that just struck me. She had been imprisoned by this man. She managed, along with some other sex workers, they were chained up in the basement. She managed to convince her captor that she was in love with him. And he took her out of the chains and brought her upstairs. And she was fooling him, you know, to try to make a getaway. And she asked him one day if he would take her to a gas station so she could just tell her parents, you know, or I think her family, I can't remember if it was her parents, that she was safe. And he said, okay, you know, we believe that she loved her. So they went to a gas station. She went to, this was in the days of payphones. She went to a payphone and there happened to be two cops there. And she went up to them and said, I have been kidnapped. I need to be saved. And they were just laughing. They looked at her and saw a strung out prostitute and they didn't take her seriously. And she had to beg for like 10 minutes. I am being kidnapped. And they were laughing at her. So eventually I think they followed her. You know, they said, okay, they're going to humor her. They follow her to the house. They discover all of these women chained up. The man is arrested. In fact, one of the women in the basement had actually died. So that also just stung me. And what was interesting was at the very end of the show, you know, it was a really difficult story you could tell for this woman to tell and for us to hear. It was so much to process. But in the end, they kind of tacked on this happy ending. So, you know, they wrote in text on the screen, she got married, she's happily married and living, you know. And I just thought, again, it's this idea of, okay, let's not even deal with the complexities of, you know, what it's saying about race and gender, sexuality. What, we're not going to even think about that. We're just going to give it a happy ending and be on our way. And that really inspired me to take on the other side of these three girls.
Wow. So how do you like do research into this and write about it without feel, I mean, this is dark stuff. This is upsetting. And I mean, even like references to what happens with even something as benign as a paperclip. I mean, this like the view of the world becomes so dark, really. How did you like preserve your mental health while writing this book?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. As kids get older, some things about parenting can get easier. I mean, not many, but some. But others don't, like having conversations about money. Point is, kids won't really know how to manage their money unless they're actually in charge of it, and that is where Greenlight can help. Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on their kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens build money confidence and lifelong financial literacy skills. With the Greenlight app, kids can learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely, thanks to games that teach money skills in a fun and accessible way. I got Greenlight debit cards for my kids. The greatest thing, you can actually add their photos that take up half the card. So when I handed the cards to the kids, they were like, this is so exciting. So they look great. Unfortunately, I only put the required 2 cents on at the beginning to make sure they worked. So the kids were like, well, what should I spend my 2 cents on? Anyway, millions of parents and kids are learning about money on Greenlight. It's the easy, convenient way for parents to raise financially smart kids and families to navigate life together. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/Zibby. That's greenlight.com/Zibby to try Greenlight for free. Greenlight.com/Zibby.
It was really hard. To say it was
Maybe I should say, did you preserve your mental health?
I don't know if I preserved my mental health. I will say that I did relatively little research. In fact, I did almost no research. For me, the research that was important was just figuring out how to inhabit these characters, you know, that it wasn't just for me writing them. It was really seeing the world through their eyes. And It was hard. There were times that were really hard. And for me, the most difficult character to do that for was Jesenia, because she has this, you know, whatever, Stockholm syndrome, or, you know, she identifies with her captor and she wants to have a future with him. And she, you know, they're going to have a baby together. And she's so, you know, she's really looking forward to it. And everyone around her knows that that's not going to happen and that that shouldn't happen. But her denial was, I would say for me, fictionally, it was such a, I love the challenge of doing it, of writing a character who really could not see what the reader wanted her to see and had built this fantasy, but it was really tough writing it also because of the abuse she endures and her, you know, unwillingness to kind of connect with reality. So that was really hard to write. I would say with the other characters and also with Dissenia, one thing that saved me from completely losing myself in the grimness was humor, you know. And one of my colleagues read my novel and he said, I can't believe how many times you mentioned Judge Judy. You know, it for me, humor is so important to preserve their humanity. It's just really, it's a really important tool. You know, everything can't be serious all the time, even though it is a serious and tragic situation. They have to have some coping mechanisms. And for me, it was really humor. It was kind of building this world that they actually cherished, you know, and also building a friendship. That was also a really big part of it for me. So it wasn't, you know, that much about doing research. And I'm often asked, you know, did you do a lot of crime research? And I didn't do any. I just imagined what it would be like when you have to really build a new world where your food is not actually food, where you're chained up, where you have to, you know, we're always talking about world building, but in, you know, relation to science fiction or fantasy. But what about people who have to do it all the time? And that actually includes all of us. So we're all world building, right? But they're a pretty extreme case.
Wow. Well, it's definitely, I mean, you did obviously a very successful job. And it's emotional. I mean, you know, you feel it when reading it, that emotion. And, you know, that's the sign of really good fiction, right? When you are inside the characters' interior lives and you feel, even when it's really horrifying stuff. So how did you end up becoming a writer?
Well, the original myth behind this is that when I was, and it's actually not a myth, it actually happened when I was 6 and my sister was 5, we had a big argument who was going to be the artist in the family. Because, of course, you know, I wanted to draw horses and she wanted to draw them and we both could not do it. And so we argued and argued. And my mom came up to both of us and said, okay, stop. Marlene, my sister, you're going to be the artist and Carolyn's going to be the writer. And that really set the path. And my sister is an artist and I'm a writer. And my mom gave me a notebook and I wrote a collection of poems immediately. And I mean, I've always wanted to learn how to draw. I just accepted writing as my lot in life. And I always wanted to do it in school, but the public school I went to had no, you know, there was no creative writing. I had to wait, unfortunately, till I got to college. And then I had just amazing writing teachers. And I, you know, I never looked back.
Wow. How is the process? What was the process like in terms of timing and like actually sitting down? Like, where did you write this book?
Well, I need to be in your anthology because, you know, where do mothers get time to write? You know, it's interesting. There was a review of my book in the Times in which Dwight Garner talked about the 25 years that had passed between my first and second books. And, you know, he described it as a time of silence. And when I look back on it, it's like it's a time of kids. I had 2 kids and noise and birthday parties and, you know, trying to get little bits of time to write here and there. And when they were very young, I had a short story collection that came out. Actually, I was pregnant with my son when it came out. And when they were very young, writing was just almost impossible. So I actually have been publishing in these 25 years, but short stories, that's what I really turned to, short stories. And I wrote a few essays, but short stories have always been my thing. I can't believe I actually wrote a novel. I have been, you know, I admire, you know, Alice Munro, Grace Paley, people who just are like, I'm writing short stories and that's it. And then suddenly this weird novel comes out of me, which I really see as a collection of short stories in some way. You know, everybody has it's so fragmented, you know, and it's fragmented for a reason, you know, not just my love of stories, but I really wanted the fragmentation of that the girls were experiencing, that their lives were, you know, upside down, that everything had been fragmented. I wanted to kind of use that as a narrative strategy for the book. that, you know, just kind of break things apart in this way to mirror what they're experiencing, not to completely confuse the readers, but just to kind of get a sense of, you know, how they're experiencing the world. So, yeah.
And what was it like to sell the book? What was that publishing journey like?
That was, I've sold two books and each one was a Cinderella story. So my Cinderella story with this book was right before the pandemic, my last outing, before we knew that we would be locked up, I was invited to give a reading in Harlem in this restaurant, in the basement of a restaurant. And it was like Sunday night. I didn't invite anyone. I just thought, you know, who's going to want to come out at a school night? You know, I have to go to Sarah Lawrence in the morning. So my husband came with me. I was reading with actually a former MFA student at Sarah Lawrence. And so the person who came before me was reading poetry and playing the didgeridoo. So it was one of those kinds of, you know, and I was like, okay, this is kind of funky. So I read my stuff, and in the audience was an old friend of mine. We used to be in a book group together, and she had been an editor years and years ago, and then took a different career path, led the publishing program at City College, and did a lot of other things, and also had two kids. So she was in the audience because she happened to live around the corner from this venue, and she knows that I am a story writer. And she said, well, do you have a collection of short stories? I'm going to begin work at Holt. I've taken a job as editor at large. And I said, well, I'm almost finished with my story collection, but I do happen to have this novel. And I had just gotten an agent a couple of months before. And I showed her that, you know, we went through the proper channels. My agent sent her the book. And I mean, really, in a matter of like 2 weeks, I had a contract. And it was really wonderful because Retha, my editor, she wasn't even working for Holt yet. And this was her first acquisition for the company. And it just, you know, then we were suddenly locked down. And my task was to revise, you know, to make edits. And, you know, I went through, I guess, what everybody goes through. Okay, there are a few things I have to change. And months later, a lot of things that I, you know, had to tighten up. And with a book like this, getting the dates right and making sure that the horror didn't overwhelm the reader. And so that was my pandemic project. You know, I worked on it through the pandemic.
Wow, that is impressive. I mean, that was a dark time. So there you go.
It was really this silver lining, this, you know, really like a Cinderella story, because I didn't think, you know, I was like, this is a really weird book. Who would be interested in reading this totally chopped up book? You know, I think that, and this is based on just what I read, I think that when men ask that question, they don't really ask it, you know, because they'll write something weird and it'll be published and people will, you know, praise it. But I think it's for women, sometimes it's hard, you know, to write something that's so out of the box and just, you know, will people be interested in reading it, you know?
It was meant to be, right? That's like a meant to be story. This book was coming out and it just had to find its way.
Right.
How I feel about my daughter half the time. You know, she was going to get out into the world one way or another. She just found me. So it's like the same thing.
Yes, exactly.
So are you working on anything else now, as if this isn't enough? This, you know.
Well, I am trying to finish the story collection, and I am, believe it or not, I'm working on another novel. And I sat down and I said, okay, this book is not going to be as fragmented and all over the place. And so far I'm about 100 pages in, and it's just as fragmented and all over the place, but I'm kind of looking at slavery and the Holocaust and trying, you know, and kind of making connections there. So
another light read.
Yes, exactly.
I'm just going to have a therapist show up at your doorstep. You're going to be like, who's this? And you're like, oh, right. That talk with Zibby a while ago. Wow. No, kidding aside, is there something that appeals to you about writing through like the worst case scenario of stuff? Like, do you know where that comes from in yourself?
Oh, that's a really good question. I guess where it comes from, the sort of thread that I think has been through all of my work is I don't like when people are not heard or seen. And that's like a thing with me, you know, even though I'm very introverted, I'm not an extrovert by any means, but I'm really talking about people who are silenced. And, you know, you can be silenced in, of course, as you know, many ways, not just through overt violence, but I've just, even as a child, I've always thought about, you know, stories that we don't hear about. You know, I thought about in fairy tales, you know, what about, you know, what actually happened with that princess? You know, I'll give you a good example. When I was, I think I was 5 years old, I was watching, no, I was about 6 or 7. I was watching West Side Story. It was on TV. And one of my sister's friends, who was a year younger, we were watching it. And she said at the end, you know, we were all crying at the end. And she said, oh, well, you know, nobody dies, actually. Tony, he didn't die. Maria doesn't die. You know, they, in the other, she said, in the other end, they all actually just live happily ever after. And I thought, well, the whole point, that there's a murder, you know, it's, I didn't know it was Romeo and Juliet, but that was, you know, it was about how fighting was bad, but that this friend just made up this whole other story about Tony and then even thought about dragging Maria into it. That just intrigued me. I never stopped thinking about that. How could she say, well, nothing actually happened to them? You know, she probably couldn't deal with the fact, but I was just so intrigued. So I'm always interested in that other side of the story, but particularly with people who are just not heard or taken seriously or seen or invisible, you know.
Wow. Well, good for you for sort of excavating. So that's awesome.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Last question. Any advice for aspiring authors?
Oh my gosh. I just came out of my graduate class and I had a long lecture. And so I can just give
okay,
that.
Just the just one thing.
No, it won't be a long lecture. One thing that I would advise people to do is when they're writing something, to try to write it to its end, as opposed to writing a little bit and then going back and revising and writing a little bit and go back and revising, but to write something to its end. Of course, that's difficult with novels, but I think there is something about getting a finished draft down and then, you know, using the powers of revision to really figure out what you want to do, as opposed to constantly editing yourself. That sort of leads to a kind of perfectionism that stymies everybody, myself included. So I may not always practice what I preach, but I think that that's the best advice I could give, is to try to write a full draft before revising it.
Okay. Well, we won't hold you to it yourself, but thank you for the advice. Well, Carolyn, thank you so much. Thank you for your time and this beautiful book, Dear Miss Metropolitan. And you know what? If choppy is your thing, just own it. That's your style. It's amazing. Why not? You have to do something different, right? Everybody has their thing. So
Right. Thank you so much, Sibby.
All right. Well, take care. It's been a pleasure.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens and at Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Also sign up for my newsletter at ZibbyOwens.com and sign up for my virtual book club and meet lots of authors on Zoom every other week. Thanks so much to Steve and Ryan at Texture Sound for the sound editing. And thank you to Morning Moon Productions for providing this fantastic intro and outro music.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.